Listener supported. WNYC Studios.
Good morning again. This is the Brian Lehrer Show on WNYC Radio. And I'm Marty Goldenson, sitting in for the vacationing Brian Lehrer. Back when the New York region was forests and farms and wetlands, rain got absorbed right where it fell. Now, as we were so rudely reminded on Wednesday, rain bounces off the pavement, heads for the sewer and the subway, overwhelms the drainage system, mixes with the sewage, contaminates the oceans and rivers with a bacteria-laden mix, 27 billion gallons of overflow annually in the New York region, according to the NRDC, the Natural Resources Defense Council. What is the best way to fix all this? The mayor knows that something's not right.
The sewer system designed many years ago was not intelligently designed to handle runoff from the streets at the same time it was handling the sewage.
So much for intelligent design. How do we stop a rainstorm from becoming an emergency? I'm joined now by reporter Jarrett Murphy, who in City Limits, the summer issue, investigated what he calls the city's silent sewage crisis. And on the phone, Basil Sagos of the environmental group Riverkeeper. Hi, both of you.
Good morning.
Hi, Marty.
Yeah, good. This is no chance to dry off this morning, by the way, from this whole crisis.
No, the crisis continues.
Yeah. Jarrett, Wednesday's storm dumped something like 1.7 inches of rain in an hour. Wouldn't that overwhelm most sewage systems? Is it unusual?
The difference in New York's system is how it's constructed underground. The fact that, like other old cities, New York combines its rainwater sewage with its bathroom and kitchen waste. And what that means is that the system can get overwhelmed because all that water is going to treatment plants that have a set capacity. What it also means is it raises the stakes when it does get overwhelmed because the water that is released, because it can't be accommodated, contains not just rainwater and runoff from the street side, but also the stuff that comes from your kitchens and bathrooms.
I see. This is a problem that New York City's Department of Environmental Protection, the DEP, has been struggling with for some time. It's not new, right?
No, concern about it dates back at least to the 50s. It was referred to then as marginal pollution, and there were plans put in place to try to capture the water, but not all of those plans were acted upon. Other priorities presented themselves, and so the problem remains. Though progress has been made, as you mentioned, still 27 billion gallons in an average year. We had data that my co-reporter Anna Lenzer acquired, which indicated that in 06, which was an unusually wet year, it was about 35 billion gallons, so it can be even more.
Hmm. Basil Sagos, you can chime in on this question. Is it just that the sewer system is old, too old?
Well, it's you know, due in part to the age of the infrastructure. It's certainly an old system, but you know, the mindset that was in place when the system was designed for many years prevailed. I mean, even until recently, you know, we've had a sort of a 20-year struggle in a way with the New York City DEP to get them to modernize their system, to improve their plants, to reduce the CSO overflows into the harbor. And you know, when the idea of reducing stormwater inputs into the system started to take hold in the U.S. and really internationally, you know, the DEP was very slow to come around and embrace the idea of perhaps reducing stormwater inputs into the system, and was, you know, very reluctant to depart from this sort of end of the pipe mindset, which is, you know, building these big tanks, building these big plants, trying to engineer our way out of a crisis that perhaps could be solved by making the city greener.
Right. Well, let's talk a little bit about this question of making the city greener versus, I guess, what might be a more engineering, or at least traditional engineering, solutions. So I want to know how the DEP plans to fix this, and we want to talk about this. But before I ask you about it, let me just say that we'd like it if our listeners would join in this conversation. They're the ones who are getting wet and polluted from all this. Please give us a call at 212-433-WNYC. That's 212-433-9692. And you can post your comments, if you'd rather not call, on any of our segments, by the way, at WNYC.org. Just click on the Brian Lehrer Show. So, what do you think? What's the DEP, what's their approach?
I think it's fair to say that it's evolving. As Basil mentioned, this has been looked at for a number of years, and going back to 92, when the state and the city first entered into an agreement to try to solve the problem, there was a plan to build a large number of these huge retention tanks to try to capture the water at the end of the line and just hold it until the sewage treatment plants could accept it. Over time, that has evolved, I think partly because of the enormous cost and difficulty in building those tanks and the fact that they only solve the problem to an extent. Now I think that it's fair to say with Plan YC and sort of evolution of ideas, DEP is considering more of the green solutions, more of the source controls. But the question that is raised by Plan YC is to what extent they're going to consider those and how the mix of those and more traditional solutions, whether they will make enough of a dent in the problem.
Where do you stand on this, Basil? Do you think that this tank business is antiquated, or has this got to be part of it?
Well, I think there's no question it has to be at least part of the solution. I doubt we can construct enough green roofs citywide to capture the rainwater from a storm like we saw the other day. So you're going to want to have a fail-safe, but again, it gets back to what is your mindset coming out of the box? Is it a more sustainable mindset where you're reducing stormwater inputs into the system, or are you, sort of solely bent on just capturing what you can and reducing or rather discharging the rest into the harbor? And I think that the DEP certainly is coming around to this. There's no question about it. And we sat through a year of meetings with them, sharing our thoughts on source control, on the sort of limitations of the end of pipe, the fact that the $2 billion...
Let me break in here, Basil. It's getting too technical for me. Mm-hmm. Explain to me what the fundamental difference is about sort of end source and preventing at the other end. Tell me what else can absorb all this water. What's the tree idea? What's the top of the building idea? Having rooftop gardens, or how do you capture this water?
No question about it. Rooftop gardens, green roofs, such things as street tree plantings where you engineer a street tree pit to actually absorb the surrounding rainwater that falls down onto it as opposed to just, having it run off past the curb and into the sewer system.
You mean the trees we have right now don't absorb
right
much
now.
Water?
Exactly. The trees we have right now, many of them, or most of them rather, are designed just to fit into that, small little tree pit that you see on the street. You might, in some instances, be able to re-engineer the sidewalk around a street tree so that the water flows towards the tree. Similarly, look in the outer boroughs, you have how many houses you have in places like the Bronx, Queens, Brooklyn, who have roof drains just discharging directly into the sewer system. And that's perhaps not at this stage right now a perfect spot for a green roof. For instance, but might be a good place for a homeowner to install such things as rain barrels, where you capture hundreds of gallons of rainwater and be able to use it, put it back to use for such things as gardening and washing your car and whatnot.
Is this practical for this huge city, New York? Has this been tried in other cities? Either of you jump in, Jared or Pavel.
Well, I can at least tell you that the rain barrel idea was implemented out in the city of Portland. Quite dramatically, several million dollars of investment in encouraging homeowners to disconnect their downspouts into rain barrels resulted in something like 1.5 billion gallons of stormwater removed from the system. Hmm. So that's a pretty dramatic example of how small and sort of progressive investments in more sustainable technologies will really pay off in the long run.
Jared Murphy from City Limits, where do you come down on this?
I think it's true that some of the technologies have been tried elsewhere, but it's also fair to say, and I think DEP would say, that elsewhere is elsewhere. In New York, there really is a certain uniqueness and singularity to the system, just the size of it. We're talking about 1 billion gallons of sewage a day. We're talking about 8 million users, thousands of miles of pipe. And there are legitimate questions about whether the scale that would be required can be produced by some of these green solutions, and also whether they'll work here. And one question about an idea called porous pavement, which is a type of sidewalk that would absorb more water, is whether it can withstand the kind of winters we have here. It's been tried in Western cities. So that's a real question. But another point that's relevant to our subway trouble this week that distinguishes the two types of solutions is that if you have an end-of-pipe solution, you're still going to have the water in the subway system. We're still going to have days like we had on Wednesday.
Mm-hmm.
If you were to somehow figure out a way to do source controls and green solutions to prevent the water from running off the streets quite so quickly and in such abundance, you would not only solve the CSO problem, the sewage overflows, but you could alleviate the flooding that hits other parts of our city, whether it's streets or subways as well.
Mike from Newark, you got a thought about this?
Yeah, these green solutions sound absurd. I mean, we're going to have millions of people in New York City putting rain buckets outside their homes and rooftop. I think engineering is the only way to go.
Basically, well, you must love this.
Yeah, well, I mean, we hear that quite often. And, you know, you look out on the street today with an inch of rain coming down, you look at the street on Wednesday, and, that's a perfect example of how the engineering solution is not going to work. I mean, Jared hit it right on. You know, you engineer in an engineering approach where you create these big tanks at the end of the pipe. Well, perhaps you capture that percentage of rainwater that would otherwise go into the harbor, but you still have the urban landscape problem, the fact that the streets are flooded and the subways are flooded.
Yeah, if anything, the city might be an easier place to implement some of these green solutions. If you think about a building that has 800 residents putting a green roof on, you could potentially spread that cost, which is one of the main barriers to doing green solutions, is the upfront cost. But you could spread that to a lot of different people. If you tried it in the burbs, then it's true. Every individual house would have to buy its own rain bucket. In the city, people can sort of pool their resources and work to get the solutions that they need.
Costed this out. You know, we engaged some of the experts in this and looked at, what does $1,000 of construction cost get you? Well, it gets you about 2,400 gallons of CSO reductions if you go end of pipe. If you look at a green street, in other words, those little triangle parks, and you re-engineer that, $1,000 of investment in a green street could potentially remove 14,000 gallons of stormwater from the system.
Do these economics make sense to you, too?
I've heard that as well, though. There are certainly still questions about implementation on a large scale. But it's true that the issue is the upfront cost is very high. Over time, it probably saves you money.
Yeah, I wondered about this, that New York seems to be sort of the flat roof capital of the world. So there's a lot of potential there, right? Or are there too many people living under that flat roof?
No, there's potential there. The question is whether, there's a lot of stuff on the roofs. And also, if you go outside of Manhattan, there are plenty of pitched roofs. And there are technical questions about, where green roofs will and won't work. It's unlikely that every building in New York would qualify for one. It's also unlikely that that would be necessary to really make a contribution to slowing the flow of the water into our sewer system.
We're having this little debate about, high-tech, low-tech. We fix it at the end of the pipe? Do we get it to absorb more into the ground, through the sidewalk, through the roofs? Where's the city, and where is the DEP, and where is sort of the mayor's, big plan to make the whole city more green? Where is it actually at in that process, and are you guys having input, and are both sides having input, and when's it going to happen?
Well, I can tell you, Marty, that we are much better off today than we were 10 years ago on this issue. I mean, we have a mayor that believes in the idea of sustainability, that has engaged the public in this idea, created the Office of Long-Term Planning and Sustainability. In Plan NYC, addressed many of the things that we're talking about right now and embraced them, has tasked the DEP and the various other city agencies to begin looking into this. The report we found had some great elements and some elements that needed improvement, but by and large, we are at least out of the box in this debate. The difference is, or the distinction between where we are today and where we might have been 10 years ago, is that the DEP's sort of formal long-term planning, as required by state law and federal law, came together in a report, or rather proposal, this year in June, that really has, as its greatest shortcoming at least, the failure to build in source control into its consideration, you know, the analysis essentially into its planning. So you have a mayor in a sense that's way ahead of his agency, and that's not necessarily a bad thing, but it's going to take time and certainly public input for you know, the various elected officials in the city and the city council and the mayor's office to, you know, to know that this is an issue that New Yorkers care about. I just want to make one point that, you know, I'm talking on behalf of Riverkeeper, but, you know, I'm also Riverkeeper is also a member of this coalition called SWIM, which is 40 citywide groups, including, you know, NRDC, Sustainable South Bronx, some developers groups, Bronx River Alliance, all these groups that have come together, who have sort of witnessed the possibilities of a better source control approach, and who see that, you know, it makes sense for the city in the long run to become more energy efficient, to become more livable, to have cleaner air, to at least begin aggressively investigating the potentials here. And I certainly share, you know, Jarrett's reluctance, if you will, or his caution that, you know, there remains many important questions to investigate. But
let me stop you for 1 second. I'm a little worried that we have this rain problem, this and this pollution problem, and we're solving it at a glacial clip.
Well, that's New York, right? I mean, you know, again,
I think
now we have at least the forum.
Let me interrupt you for a second because I think Ashwin is on the line, and he's from Bombay.
Yeah, hi.
Hi, Ashwin. Has Bombay solved this?
I don't know if it solved this, but if you remember, there were a lot of there were floods like a couple of years ago in Bombay. But growing up, I clearly remember that, you know, 1.7 inches was not. I mean, we had open gutters in Bombay that would take care of the runoff, and sometimes we'd have street flooding. But I don't think that this amount of rain would have damaged any of the services there. I'm just, I mean, you compared New York with Portland, but I would be curious to know how the people you have on the show would compare New York to Bombay and other tropical cities that are, you know, that get and anticipate a lot of monsoon rains.
In the couple minutes we have left, let me ask that of Jarrett Murphy, who is an investigative editor at City Limits.
I don't know how they compare in terms of rain, but I think you're talking about two very different systems. I mean, besides Bombay being in a tropical climate and therefore perhaps more suited to rain, you know, the infrastructure that New York is dealing with, all of it is very old. So when our sewage infrastructure gives us too much water to deal with, then our antiquated subway infrastructure or our complicated and large subway infrastructure has to deal with it too. And that's something to keep in mind when we talk about a tropical city like Bombay, is that, you know, not only is the city perhaps shifting in how it's approaching this problem, maybe talking about more about green solutions, the problem itself could be shifting. I mean, global warming hangs over this debate,
sure,
but in a complicated way. You know, as someone from DEP told us in our piece, which you can try to read if you want at citylimits.org, global warming, we know it's coming. We know it's probably going to be bad. But exactly how it affects a water system is complicated. It could mean more droughts, which affects the water going into the system through drinking fountains and people's pipes. It could affect rainstorms and the intensity of them. It could do both. And so planning for that while trying to solve this old problem really does complicate it quite a bit for the city.
Ed's on the line from Queens. And Ed, I think you were going to address this issue, this sort of fundamental issue that there really is one pipe for both the rainwater and the sewage.
Oh, incidentally, just an aside, Queens doesn't, at least this part of Queens, eastern Queens, does not have a combined sewer system. Basically, the sewers, I think the pipe for the street sewers are like 3 feet and above, and household sewage is maybe 6 to a foot, so maybe you can stick the, and the outlets are all there, so maybe you can stick the, separate them in the same pipe, you know, without put a smaller pipe inside it.
Is this practical for a whole city to try this, Jarrett?
What the caller's talking about?
Yeah, having a dual system.
It's probably practical, but you would have to tear up the one you have, and that's impractical. That's not going to happen. He's right that part of the city, you know, where the sewer lines were laid later, as in more modern cities, they were separate, but a good part of it is still combined.
And I remember when I first discovered this, that it's shocking to discover that, you know, the rainwater goes down and combines with the sewage, and if there's too much rain, the sewage goes into the rivers and oceans. It's just a shocking, surprising fact.
It is, and it's right under our noses, literally. If you were to walk out to the end of a street on the East River and look down, you'd probably see the little green sign and kind of a small, dark-looking hole, and it's innocuous-looking and until you realize that that's what it does. It releases untreated water, which contains untreated sewage, into our waterways, and it happens, you know, quite frequently.
I wish we had more time, but we're out of time. But something tells me, between global warming and the speed at which this will be fixed, that you'll both be back.
I hope so.
So, Jarrett Murphy, thanks a lot for dropping by. He's an investigator at City Limits, an editor. And Basil Sagos, who is with the Riverkeeper. Thanks for coming by.
Thanks a lot.
Thank you, Marty.